are now going over approaching one of our future landing sites selected in this smooth region to call the Sea of Tranquility. Smooth in order to make it easy for the initial landing attempt in order to preclude having to dodge mountains. Now you can see the long shadows of the lunar sunrise. Approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
Created the heavens and the earth. And the Bible tells us that on the first day, it says he created light and he separated it from the darkness. The Bible tells us that on the second day, he created the atmosphere, the skies, and he separated the waters that covered the earth from the water vapors above. It says on the third day that God created the land and he created the plants and he created the trees. The Bible says on the fourth day, God created the sun and the moon and the stars. And on the fifth day, it says God created the fish that would swim in all the seas, and he created the birds that would fly in all the air. And then on the sixth day, it says he created all the animals that would walk on the ground, including humans. Then on the seventh day, it says God rested from his work. This is the creation story that's familiar to many of us. This is the creation story that some of us grew up hearing in church, if you went to church. This is the creation story that just compels something deep within our souls that sort of draws us in. This is the creation story that when these astronauts in the kind of crazy 1960s were the first people to go out into space and look back on the form of the earth and have the chance to send one message back to all the humans who were listening, this is the story that they chose to share. And yet, this is also the same creation story that over the last 150 years, especially the last 20 or 30 years, has caused a lot of conflict, a lot of questions, a lot of confusion. It's caused just a lot of questions by people who are still asking the questions, where did we come from and how did we get here? And is this story that I maybe heard as a kid or is this story that I heard in church, does it really tell me how we got here? Or is it just another fairy tale? In light of what so many people are discovering in the world of science, in light of what so many people are understanding now about how the world came into being, is this story like all the other ancient stories that we've seen? Because in the last 50 years or so, archaeologists have uncovered lots of other ancient stories, creation stories by other people who tell how the world came into being. And so is this creation story from Genesis 1 just a fairy tale like those others? Now, this is a big question, and it's almost like opening a can of worms. And why am I opening this can of worms at the risk of alienating a whole bunch of people? Why are we doing a series based on this? Well, I think it's super important to talk about for a couple reasons. Let me give you first, I think it's important to talk about because there's this perception out there that science and faith are at odds. And as a result, you have to choose one over the other. Now, there's a lot of people out there who are science-only people. And you might have read some of their books or seen them in Barnes & Noble. A couple of them, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, have written some. These aren't fringe, necessarily, people. These aren't conspiracy theory books, you know. These are books that are on the New York Times bestseller list. And in these books, what these scientists assert is that science has now shown us, by understanding evolution, by understanding how old the Earth is, by understanding all that science is telling us, we now really know how the Earth came into being, and therefore we don't really have any need for God. We don't really have any need for religion. We don't have any need for faith. In fact, science trumps faith, and in the end, science will win over faith. And people who just maintain their faith and stick to organized religion and believe in these old fairy tales are basically just deluding themselves. I saw an interview a few weeks ago with Stephen Hawking. You might have heard of him. He's probably one of the most well-known physicists and scientists in our time, in the world. He wrote a book about 20 years ago called A Brief History of Time. It's probably the best-selling science book of all time. And just a few weeks ago, he gave an interview, and when he was asked about this question of science and faith, this is what he said. He said, "There's a fundamental difference between religion, which is based on authority, and science, which is based on observation and reason. Science will win because it works." In other words, there's these two things, and they're competing. And one of them, religion, is based on authority, what people tell you you have to believe. And science is based on fact. It's based on reason. It's based on observation. And in the end, science is going to win. Now, it's funny because on the very other end of the spectrum, you have some faith-only kind of people. And they would say some similar things, but from the opposite standpoint. In other words, they would say that science and faith are in conflict, and that ultimately you've just got to choose faith. And that it doesn't matter what the scientists are telling you. It doesn't matter what people are saying. It doesn't matter what culture is saying. That in the end, it's a test of our faith. And what God wants to know is, do we really believe in Him? Do we really believe in His inerrant, infallible, you know, perfect Word? And even when all the other things are telling us that these things in the Bible are old and outdated and don't make sense, and how can miracles happen, and all those things, it's ultimately a test of our faith. Are we going to believe? And so the faith-only people would, in many ways, come to the same conclusion. They'd say science and faith are in conflict, and ultimately, you have to choose one over the other. And this issue of science and faith being in conflict has been focused in one place and primarily one place, and that's the issue of creation and evolution. That when it comes to this one issue, it seems like Christians have the biggest, you know, hurdle to cross in figuring out how do science and faith interact. You see, we don't have a big problem with science in our everyday lives. I mean, when you go to the doctor, you want some good science, don't you? I mean, if you get sick, if you've got an illness or you've got a disease or something's wrong with you, I mean, you want your doctor to give you the best drugs, the best, you know, medicine, the best treatment, the best surgery. You want your doctor to bring to bear the best research that science has to offer. We fully embrace it when it comes to that. And yet, for some reason, when it comes to this issue, there is this conflict. So what I want to do for the next couple of weeks is challenge that perception that there's a conflict between science and faith. Now, the other reason I think it's important to talk about this very contentious issue of creation and evolution is because there's also a perception about what Christians are like when it comes to this issue. And I got to say, the perception isn't very good because Christians have often taken strong stands when it comes to this specific issue of creation versus evolution. And it's created a perception that has, what I would say, missional implications for us as a church. Now, let me show you a few statistics to tell you kind of what I'm talking about. Let's look at a few graphs. This is the first one. This was a survey that was done recently in 2006. It's been done for about 30 years, and all the numbers have stayed the same. And people, Americans were asked, which of the following statements comes closest to your views on the origin and development of human beings? In other words, where did humans come from? 36%, starting at the bottom, believe that humans developed or evolved, but that God guided the process in some way. So they would accept what most of the scientists would say about evolution, but believe that God guided the process. 13% believe that humans developed or evolved, but God had no part in the process. In other words, there's no God. These are the atheists. These are the science, hardcore, you know, scientists I mentioned before, science-only people. They believe fully in evolution. God had no part in anything. 5% other or no opinion. And then 46% of Americans believe that God created humans in their present form. In other words, almost half of Americans would reject what most scientists believe. And that's just a statement of truth. If you talk to anybody that's in the scientific world, in the university setting, in geology or physics or biology or chemistry or any of those settings, they would say that evolution is pretty much well established. They've moved beyond that. It's not a question to them anymore. Everything they do is based on that. They've moved beyond it. So they hold that. So almost half of Americans would say, no, I'm not buying it. I believe God made humans in the way we see them today. In other words, they hold what we would traditionally call a more creationist perspective. Now, if you dig a little deeper, I want to show you another graph. You can take these results and you can base them on church attendance. And so in the orange or yellow or whatever color that is, you see that these are the people that believe that humans were developed from other life forms. They evolved. And in the blue are people who believe that God created humans in their present form, a creationist viewpoint. So if you look all the way to the left, if people attend church once a week, fairly religious people, fairly dedicated people, twice as many believe in a creationist perspective than a more evolutionist perspective. Then you go down the line, people that attend almost every week, once a month, seldom, and never. And you see that the graphs change on both lines. So that when you get to the point where you're talking to people who are not church people at all, they're outsiders to church, they're not religious people, they don't attend church at all, most of them believe the opposite. Most of them accept the science and believe in some form of evolution, while a much smaller percentage of them hold to some form of creation. Now, one more graph of how you can parse this out by education level. So you've got the same kinds of results here. And on the very left, they asked people who had a high school education or less. And again, what you've got is a smaller number of people who accept evolution and a much larger number who believe in creation. And as you go to the other side of the graph and you talk to people who went to college and then graduated from college and then actually went and did some kind of postgraduate education, you see a huge number of people in that category accept an evolution standpoint, whereas a much smaller percentage of people take a creationist standpoint. Now, what do these graphs mean? Some of you might be bored. And I know you were expecting a sermon, not a science lesson, not graphs, but tough. I've got the microphone, so no. What does this mean? I think it means if you begin to look at the data, first of all, about half of Americans reject most of the scientific data and hold some sort of literal understanding of how Genesis unfolded. And then when you dig down deep and figure out why do they hold that, there's a strong chance they don't hold that because there's some compelling science that causes them to disagree with the majority of science. In other words, two of the biggest reasons they hold that position is because one of their religious beliefs, because the more someone attends church, the more religious they are, the more likely they are to take a creationist standpoint. And a lot has to do with education level as well. The less educated someone is, the more they take that standpoint. The more educated someone is, the more they take an evolutionary standpoint. Which means if you are somebody that's not a Christian and you do not attend church and you're more scientifically minded and you embrace all of the science and take a more evolutionary standpoint, when you look at Christians, what is the perception you get of them? That they're largely ignorant, that they're largely uneducated, and that they're largely driven by their predetermined religious beliefs. And they're going to hold dogmatically to that, even if all of the evidence is pointing in the opposite direction. And I've had tons of conversations with people who are not Christians. And when you push them, they would say, yeah, that's kind of what I think of when I think of especially evangelical Christians, just kind of ignorant, backwards, old-fashioned, going to stick to their beliefs, even when everything else is suggesting the opposite. Now, whether that's right or wrong, whether that's valid or not, it is a perception that we have to deal with. And here's the truth. Maybe you're here tonight and you would say you are one of those people. Like you're an outsider. Like you would say, I'm not a Christian, or I'm kind of a Christian, but I've still got some really big questions. I'm trying to wrestle through those. And the truth is, when it comes to this issue in particular, Christians haven't been very helpful and they haven't been very consistent. And what we need to do is we owe it to you. If you're one of those people, we owe it to you to demonstrate to you that when you come to church, when you enter a church community, we're not going to ask you to check your mind at the door, that we can be logical people, that we can be reasonable people, that we're not going to ignore evidence that when it's presented to us, that we want to take all of the evidence and make a logical decision about it. Because you see, the burden is on us, and we owe it to you to demonstrate that. And if we can't demonstrate that, when it comes to the issue of creation and evolution, then I don't blame you for not listening to us when it comes to the issue of Jesus. I mean, it's as simple as that. If we can't demonstrate some credibility with the outside world in a place like Denver, where we're a mile from the University of Denver, a highly educated setting, a highly educated, scientifically minded culture, if we can't demonstrate some credibility when it comes to this issue, then I don't blame people who are walking through our doors for not listening to us much when it comes to the issue of Jesus. And so, for the next 3 weeks, we're going to tackle this issue. We're going to jump into it. I'm going to unpack some things. This isn't something we normally do here. We normally open the Bible and try to ask if, you know, there's some things in the Bible that have some practical application for our lives. A lot of times we talk about Jesus, we look at his teaching, things like that. So if you're interested in, you know, practical application of the Bible, if you're interested in Jesus, come back in 3 weeks. We'll talk about him then. But for the next couple of weeks, we are going to dig into this issue. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to start by laying out three positions, ways that Christians have approached this specific issue of creation and evolution. I'm just going to give broad overviews tonight, and then the next 2 weeks we're going to dig more into some of the science. We're going to dig into Genesis 1 and read through it and try to figure out what it says. And we'll come back to these three positions, and we'll talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses of each one. But I just want to highlight them for you tonight. So the first position that some Christians take is what's been called the young earth position. So, this is a group of people who would largely reject a lot of the scientific evidence that suggests that humans evolved and that suggests that the earth is like 4.6 billion years old. So when they come to the Bible, they see that there's all these genealogies and they add up the years in the Bible. And for them, it seems like if you add up all the years, the earth should only be like 6,000 or 10,000 or maybe 20,000 years old, but not really, really old. And so for them, they don't think that the earth is very old. They think it's very young, and they don't think that evolution actually happens. So when they come to the Bible and they come to Genesis 1, they read it very literally. They read it as a historical, scientific record of how God literally created the world. And so when it says he did something on day one, they see that as a 24-hour day one. And then there's 24-hour day. I mean, they read it literally. And this is called the young earth position because they believe that the earth is very young. Now, there's a second group of Christians that hold a different position when it comes to this issue. It's called the old earth position. And this group of Christians looks at all the scientific evidence and says, yeah, it sure does seem like we're living on a very old earth. I mean, it just, when you go to the Grand Canyon, when you look at the geology, when you look at all this, it just, everything looks like the earth really is 4.6 billion years old and ice ages and fossils and all that kind of stuff. And so they accept that, but when it comes to evolution, they've still got some pretty big questions about whether, you know, do humans really evolve from monkeys and what would that make humans? And there's just some big questions there. And so when it comes to Genesis chapter 1, they take it somewhat literally. They think that the sequence of events happened in the way that it lays it out, day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4. And they think that God actually did create specific things at specific moments of time. But there's this Hebrew word in Genesis 1, the word yom, that's the word for day. And that word most of the time means a 24-hour day. But there's sometimes that it's used where it just means a period of time. And so people that take this position think that it doesn't actually refer to six 24-hour literal days, but that those were probably much longer periods of time. So each day wasn't 24 hours. Each day in Genesis 1 was more like a few million years. So that the sequence still happens in the way, and God still sort of creates according to this, you know, time frame, but it happens much longer. And so that's why it's called the old earth position. Third position that some Christians take is called theistic evolution. Theistic evolution. And as the name implies, these Christians accept most, if not all, of what the scientists are discovering and saying is true about our world. They would say, yes, the world is very old. You know, the science is there for that. And yes, it does seem like humans did evolve, that biological evolution is true based on all the science. And so they would accept that. Now, they would be quick to say they still believe in God. That's why it's called theistic evolution. And they still believe that God created the process of evolution, just like God created gravity, just like God created thermodynamics. Do we have any engineers in here? Thermodynamics. Yes. All right. Just like God created all these other things, they would say God created the process of biological evolution, and he oversees it, but that the world sort of came into being through that process. So that when this group of Christians comes to Genesis chapter 1, they would read it, and they would say that we shouldn't take it literally. That Genesis chapter 1 is much more poetic. And the language that's put in there is much more poetic. And that the ancient people, the ancient Israelites, when they first told it, and the first person, whether it was Moses or someone else, first wrote it down, they never intended for us scientific people, you know, 4,000 years later, to read back into it scientific facts. They would say, we're reading that into it. That's not what it's intended for. It's intended to tell us that God is this amazing creator, and he did this beautiful thing, and the world was good, and that humans are created in God's image, but we shouldn't read scientific facts into the details. It shouldn't be taken literally in that way. That's theistic evolution. Now, those are the three positions, and there's subpositions under each of them, and we could go into that, but generally speaking, those are the three common positions. And those are three positions that godly, legitimate, genuine, authentic, well-respected, evangelical, even conservative Christians have taken all across the spectrum. You can find very well-respected evangelicals, Protestants, Catholics, people from all different Christian backgrounds who take each of these three positions. Now, there's one position I didn't mention, and I just want to touch on it for a second before we move on, and that's atheistic evolution. In other words, there are some scientists who would say, well, we do believe that the earth is old, and that's clear from science and geology and everything. We do believe in evolution, and that's clear. And not only do we believe the earth is old, and not only do we believe in evolution, but we believe that that also means, therefore, that God does not exist. And the reason I don't think this is a valid option is because it just doesn't work. I mean, it simply doesn't work, because you can accept all of that science, but there's nothing about accepting that science that challenges a belief in God as a creator, in God's existence. Because you see, the science is basically there to determine what natural processes are. That's the kind of questions that science wants to answer. You observe things and you use the scientific method to try to figure out what is the natural process by which something happened. And so if evolution is that, whatever it is, that's what science determines. But science is not able to ask the why question. Why did our world come into being? Why is it even here? Why was evolution, if that was the method that the world came into being, why was that the method? Why wasn't there some other method? Stephen Hawking, the same scientist that I mentioned before, who said that, you know, in the end, science is going to win. In that same interview, he was asked, you know, are there any mysteries still out there that you've got questions about? And this is what he said. He said, I want to know why the universe exists, why there is something greater than nothing. You see, that's a question that he still has that his science cannot answer. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a knock on science. It's just to say that science can answer certain questions. And maybe it can answer questions about processes and how things came into being and all those kind of things. But ultimately, that really has nothing to do with whether God exists or not. And so if you're an atheist and you're here tonight and you would say, you know, I'm an atheist, that's fine. You can be an atheist. Chances are you're probably an atheist for other reasons. You're not an atheist because of evolution. And if you've got other reasons, that's great. We can talk about them. There's days where I've got some reasons maybe for like, wow, does my beliefs really line up with what I'm seeing here? And so we can talk about those. But if you think that buying into a more evolutionary viewpoint entails atheism, it just doesn't. The only thing that it challenges is a strictly literal reading of Genesis chapter 1. And so if you do accept all that, then it does challenge a strictly literal reading of Genesis chapter 1. And that's something we'll talk about as we go forward. But it doesn't challenge the fact of whether God exists or not. Now, that's a lot of introduction for the first week, and we've just got a couple of minutes left, and I do actually want to open the Bible and read it before we leave. Is that all right? We usually do that in the sermon, and so we couldn't close without opening the Bible tonight. So Romans chapter 14, if you would turn there, I just want to read a couple of verses that I think set up the trajectory for where we're going over the next couple of weeks, and will really inform our discussion. So Romans chapter 14, Paul wrote a letter to a group of Christians who were living in Rome, and he wrote about all these theological things. It's the longest letter we have from Paul. That's why there's like 16 whole chapters. And at the end of the chapter, at the end of his letter, he starts to give some practical advice to these Christians. And this is what he says, starting in verse 1 of chapter 14. Accept those whose faith is weak, without quarreling over disputable matters. One person's faith allows them to eat everything, but another person, whose faith is weak, eats only vegetables. Now, what the heck is Paul talking about here? People who have weak faith only eat vegetables? Like, what does that mean? Basically, what he's saying is, look, there are some really important things when it comes to the Christian faith. There are some major central things. Does God exist? You know, is the world a screwed up place? Did Jesus really die on a cross? Did Jesus really rise from the grave? These are really central, important things. And then he says there are some disputable matters. In other words, there are some matters where people, Christians, have legitimate disagreements about them. In the church of Rome, in Paul's day, part of the church there was Jewish Christians. They had a Jewish background. And so they still adhered to the Jewish law. And so they observed all the Jewish holidays. And for them, it was really important to observe these Jewish holidays, and they thought those days were more sacred than every other day on the calendar. And then there were a bunch of people who weren't Jewish by background. They didn't keep the Jewish law. They didn't keep the Jewish holidays. And they would raise the question, wait a second, every day is sacred. Every day is important. They're all the same. And Paul would look at these two groups and say, chill out. Like, it's okay. It's a disputable matter. Another issue was the Jewish Christians, because they still kept the law, kept all the dietary restrictions, which meant that the only meat that they could eat was meat that was from clean animals, that was kosher, that they knew where they were getting it from. And when they would go to the marketplace in Rome, they were never sure where the meat was coming from. So they would go to the local, you know, market or the butcher, and they would buy meat, and yet they could never be sure, did this meat come from a clean animal? Is it kosher? It might have even come from an animal that had been sacrificed to a pagan god. And for them, that was like a major no-no. And so what they decided was, the easiest thing to do is to just not eat meat. Like, that's the easiest way for us to make sure we eat the right things, is we'll just become vegetarians. And then we'll know that we're never going to get in trouble. And so they were saying, we all need to be vegetarians. And then all the other Christians who don't have a Jewish background, who could care less, are saying, no way, I'm not giving up my meat. Like, I like a good burger. I'm not becoming I'm going to eat meat whenever I want. And so Paul looks at them and he's saying, look, this is a disputable matter, and that's okay. He goes on and he says, starting in verse 3, the one who eats everything must not treat with contempt the one who does not, and the one who does not eat everything must not judge the one who does, for God has accepted that person. Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master they stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. He goes on. He says, some consider one day more sacred than another. Others consider every day alike. Everyone should be fully convinced in their own mind. Those who regard one day as special do so to the Lord. Those who eat meat do so to the Lord, for they give thanks to God. And those who abstain do so to the Lord, and they give thanks to God. See, what Paul is saying is there are some major issues, and we need to major on those majors. And then there are some minor issues, and we need to minor on the minors. So, you know, can in our culture today, you know, can Christians drink alcohol? That was like a big one. I grew up in the South, and that was like a big question. And of course, there's some people who choose not to, and they say, you know what, I'm just going to stay away from the stuff. It's not good for me, you know, just it's easiest for me to stay away from the stuff. Great, great conviction, stick with it. Others who say, I love a good glass of wine at dinner. Great, that's your conviction, stick with it. It's a disputable matter. It's not something that we need to get too excited about. When it comes to voting, there are some Christians who think it's really important, when I go to the voting booth, that I want to vote for candidates who are only pro-life. Like, that's a conviction for them. Great. You know, vote your convictions. There's other Christians who would say, you know what? I've got other convictions when it comes to who I vote for. There's other things that I think are as important or other, you know, issues that I'm taking into consideration. That's great. Know what your convictions are and stick with them. But that is a disputable matter. And you know what? When we come to the issue of creation and evolution, it's not a major issue. It's also a disputable matter. Now, it's an important issue because, again, I think there's this perception in our culture that science and faith are at odds and we've got to choose one over the other. And I think we need to challenge that. It's important because there's missional implications, because most of the people that drive by this church and by all the other churches that don't go to church have this perception that Christians are mostly backwards and ignorant and only stick to their predetermined beliefs, and they're not going to be open to anything else. And that's a perception we've got to challenge as well. So it's an important issue, but it is a minor issue. And we've got to keep that in mind as we go forward. Now, let me close by asking three questions. Three questions that I want you to ask this week as we go out of here. Number one, when I mentioned the three positions that Christians take, young earth, old earth, theistic evolution, what was your initial inclination? And will you come back over the next couple of weeks with an open mind towards exploring the other positions. You see, some of you maybe have thought about this issue. You've read the books and you're fired up, you know, about excited about this because you've got a position. If that's the case, great. Would you come back over the next couple weeks and be open to the other two positions? Like, would you be willing to do that? Or maybe you haven't thought about it much, but when I, you know, mention them, you kind of had just this initial, I think I would probably land there. Great. Would you come back over the next few weeks and just be open to considering all the positions? Second question, will you be committed to creating an atmosphere in this church community where different viewpoints on this disputable matter are welcomed and respected? Now, this might be a tough one for some of you. You might be more of a black and white person, where you don't really like the gray areas, you don't like the ambiguity, you just think that everything's important and we have to take a stand on everything and that's just the way it is. And if you're that way, I understand that because I'm a little bit that way as well, and it can be tough. And so let me just challenge you. Maybe for the next few weeks, you just need to pray for patience and grace. You know, that God would just open your mind and help you understand. You know what's really important is for us as a community of faith to be on a mission. And that mission is to help other people grow in their relationship with Christ. It's to introduce people who don't know who Jesus is to Jesus, and then to help people who already do know who Jesus is to grow in their relationship with Him. And so this is a disputable matter. This isn't something that's central to that mission. And so the mission is the most important thing. And so will we be willing to create a community where people who come in from the outside, who are maybe really scientifically minded, maybe really educated, and really take a position that's very different than maybe some of us, will we welcome them? Will they feel accepted? Will they feel like, these are my people? Or will they feel like, ugh, these are not like my people at all? Will we be committed to creating that? Last question, number three. If you're an outsider, will you give Christians a second chance on this issue and on other more important issues? Again, you might be here today and you would say, I'm kind of like an outsider. I'm not a churchy type person. I'm not a Christian, or I am a Christian, but this is still kind of new to me and I've got some big questions. Would you give us another chance to talk about these questions? Because again, it's important to talk about creation and evolution. But here's the truth. Do you know that some of the smartest, most rational, most logical, most scientifically minded men and women who have ever lived have come to the conclusion that there really is a God, that He really does love us, and that He really does want to have a relationship with us through His Son? And if that's true, then we owe it another chance. We owe the church another chance. We owe the Bible another chance. We owe even organized religion. It has done so much bad in the world, granted, but also a lot of good. We owe it another chance as well. So would you be willing to give them another chance? Will you think about those three questions? Ask them this week. Come back next week. We're going to dig deep into this. We'll go through the three positions. If I'm bold enough, I might even share with you where I land, but I don't know. Maybe I'll get scared and not do that, but we'll see. But let me close this in a word of prayer, and we'll wrap up. Lord God, we do worship You and praise You as our Creator. And regardless of how the world came into being, regardless of how we should interpret Genesis 1 and all the other passages, Lord, we know a few things for certain. We know that You love us, and we know that You've changed the lives of so many people in this very room, and You've done something in our lives, and that Your Spirit resides inside of us, and that Your Spirit is walking with us through life and through all the tough stuff that we face. And we know that we find grace when we come to You, and we know that we find comfort when we're going through hard stuff. And so I pray that we wouldn't lose sight of those things, that even in this discussion that can be fun, that can be informative, that can stretch our minds and should stretch our minds, because you've called us to love you with all of our beings, including our minds. I pray that would happen. But I pray also that you would speak to our hearts and that you would draw each one of us to you, and that as we journey on our faith journey together, that we do it together as a group, and you would help us to encourage one another. We lift all this up in your name. Amen.